This sermon has been revised. The current version is 3:20:14.
Today is February 10th, year 2008, and it's the first Sunday in Lent. We're going to talk today about sins of omission, which that's one of the biggest topics I talk about, and it really needs to be talked about, because that's one of the biggest sins that people are committing out there for two reasons. One, because they forgot even what sin is anymore. But that's something separate. I mean, if you know what sin is, and you know somebody has sin, and you don't say anything, that's a problem. But what I mean by that is people conveniently forget what sin is. They don't want to think it's really a sin, or they put it out of their mind. You know, such as knowingly praying in communion with notorious heretics. You know you're praying with non-Catholics, but you like to deceive yourself and pretend you're either not doing that at all, or it's not a sin. Now, it has to do with many things in life, though. These are the most dangerous things to which even the just man, when they say he falls seven times a day, he can make little venial sins in this area, but the dangerous is, if you keep doing that, you'll fall into mortal sins of omission. And it's very dangerous, because people come up and say things and do things in your presence just to get you to commit that sin of omission, and you think you really didn't do anything because you didn't do it, but you were a partner to it, and you witnessed it, and you didn't say anything about it. So it's a very important thing. And we're going to quote, I was just reading in my daily readings, I'm now reading through the prophetical books of Ezekiel, and I was in chapter 3, and they have a great commentary on that, so we're going to talk about that commentary. I'm going to read first the verses we're talking about, and I think everybody knows these verses in Ezekiel. These are probably one of the premier verses on sins of omission, in Ezekiel chapter 3, verse 17 to 21. Son of man, I've made thee a watchman to the house of Israel, and thou shalt hear the word out of my mouth, and shalt tell it to them from me. If when I shall say to the wicked, thou shalt surely die, thou declare it not to him nor speak to him, that he may be converted from his wicked way and live, the same wicked man shall die in his iniquity, but I will require his blood at thy hand. But if thou give warning to the wicked, and he be not converted from his wickedness and from his evil way, he indeed shall die in his iniquity, but thou hast delivered thy soul. Moreover, if the just man shall turn away from his justice and shall commit iniquity, I will lay a stumbling block before him, he shall die. Because thou hast not given him warning, he shall die in his sins, and his justices which he hath done shall not be remembered, but I will require his blood at thy hand. Now he's saying you even have to warn the just man to stay just. If you see that he's going off course, and you're not even edifying your flock by telling them what they need to persevere in the faith, you're going to read this. So a Catholic's obligation is not just to admonish a sinner, but even to warn good Catholics to stay good. To not swerve, to persevere in the faith. And then if you know that you haven't been preaching that the right way to your flock, and they start falling into those sins, God's going to hold you accountable. But if thou warn the just man, and the just man may not sin, and he doth not sin, living he shall live, because thou hast warned him, and thou hast delivered thy soul. Now it's very important. We're going to read the commentaries on that. So he's talking about when you know somebody has violated one of God's commandments, and you have access to that person. Like I always say many times, you're not obliged to profess the faith to everybody out there. But you are, especially, most importantly, to those whom you come in intimate contact with, or even social conversations when people come up to you and they say something that's wrong or not correct. You have to correct them. You have to admonish them. Charitably, but you still have to do it, or you commit a sin of omission. For somebody to come up real quick and say to you maybe, hey, I'm a Protestant. I go to the Southern Baptist Church down here, and boy, I know we're saved. And he says that to you. If you don't rebuke him and tell him, no, I have to tell you that you're in a false church. That's not the true church of Christ. Only inside the Catholic Church can you be saved. If you die where you are now, you're going to go to hell. You can even tell him like this. If you die where you can't get to heaven where you are. You can tell him in many different ways. But see how the devil can spike you? He can have somebody come up on there and say something to you, and you just walk away and don't say nothing. Or even another thing can happen. People can put cards for you to sign if you're working in a business or a place. And somebody comes up and gives you a sign of condolence because someone's sick that you know, one of your coworkers. You got to read that card before you sign it. If there's something heretical in it or immoral or against the faith, you can't sign it. For instance, endure in your sufferings and death because after you die, you know you're going to be happy. You know, something like that. And you know the guy's not Catholic. You can't even say that about a Catholic because a Catholic can't be assured of salvation. So you be careful with that. Somebody can throw a card in your face of condolence to a worker, the guy that you're working with, and you just sign that card. That's a sin of commission, though. That's not a sin of omission. So that really doesn't apply to what we're talking here is omissions. That's a sin of a commission. So now we're talking about the great danger of, we're going to read these commentaries right now in a minute, but the biggest danger that we're going to read here, and Augustine talks about that, when people start committing these sins, there's a veil of darkness that comes over them because of all the multiple sins that are committing. and they don't really think that they're sinning anymore. They really, really think that they're in a state of grace and everything's fine and that they haven't done anything wrong. And that's the operation of error we talk about, where they sit back and they think that everything's okay. And I always quote these verses in Proverbs 16:25. There's a way that seems right to the man, but the end thereof is death. Or Proverbs 30:12, he says, there's a generation that is just in its own eyes, and yet they're not washed of their filthiness. St. Paul says that in 1 Corinthians 4:4, I have nothing on my conscience, but I'm not hereby justified. So these people that I'm talking to out there, you people, you got to understand you've been blinded. When I read these teachings to you, you better first of all accept them on faith, because you cannot yet comprehend that you've committed this sin. And once you accept what I tell you, that this really is a sin, yes, there really is such a thing as a sin of omission, and yes, you really do share in the guilt of the person that you do not admonish or rebuke equally in their crime, and you really sink that into your heart, thank God, and you humbly get down on your knees and say, I am a rotten sinner, Lord, because pride is the only reason why people don't admit these things. I can never do wrong. And even if I did wrong, God's not going to hold me accountable because it wasn't my fault. The devil plays games with her, and that's full of pride. Only humility is going to get you to understand that indeed, all you people out there that are going to these non-Catholic churches to attend Mass, that aren't rebuking people who are in your presence when you know they're sinning, who are not admonishing these apostate rulers in the Vatican II Church and the traditionalist movements when you come in contact with them, when you should, you are committing sins of omission, you're equally guilty of them. It doesn't matter, all this time you've been thinking you're innocent because you're under the operation of error. You can't, it's like the one guy who always tells the story. When I was committing my humongous sins of omission in Father Blanco's chapel. And then finally God worked it on my conscience and gave me the grace and clubbed me over the head. And I had the humility to get down on my knees and say, God, I'm a rotten sinner, I've done wrong. And then the one proudful guy in there was saying, it's not my problem what the lady next to me believes in or what the priest believes in. I don't believe in that. Yeah, but you're praying with them. You're not admonishing them. Because if you were rebuking them the way you should, you would create a ruckus. But first of all, the priest would kick you out. That's second of all. First of all, you don't belong in there. Because if he doesn't listen, you're knowingly praying to communion with notorious heretics. So this is typical of all the people out there that are attending masses in all these churches. They don't care what church they go to as long as they have a valid mass. They don't care what sins are being committed, what sins against the faith are being committed. Sins of omission include also not admonishing the person correctly. It's not good enough to say when John Paul II kissed the crayon, it's just scandal. It's more than scandal. It's a mortal sin against the faith. It's blasphemy. It's idolatry. For him to profess that he knows God and then kiss the crayon and say that's like the giving it reverence, that's idolatry. That's worship of a false god. It's blasphemy. It's idolatry. And J.P. So if you just say scandal, guess what? Like John Venieri and all these other people out there in the traditional movement are afraid to come out and say that was an act of idolatry and blasphemy because they know if they say that, then they're going to have to admit that he's a public heretic and therefore he's no longer the Pope and hold the state of a conscience position. I don't care whatever your motive is for not admitting the truth. It's all rooted in pride because you don't want to admit that you've been wrong or human respect because you don't want to lose your followers. And that's a mortal sin. Now we're going to read about the commentary on Ezekiel chapter 3, verse 17 to 21. On verse 17 it says, let none purge through thy neglect. The pastor kills the man whom he delivers up to death by silence. That St. Gregory the Great teaches that in his homily 11, chapter 9. And so, this is what he's saying here. By your silence, you deliver up your brother to death by not admonishing him. If you know your brother's committing some really grievous sins in the camp, even amongst us Catholics, and you let him continue to do that, and you don't say anything to him, first of all, you don't care about him at all, really. First, you don't care about God. Let's do the first priorities. You don't care about God, then you don't care about your own soul, and then you don't even care about him. So, don't let human respect or anything stop you from rebuking them. The thing, folks, out there that's going to get you to do the right thing is say, I myself, Richard Joseph Michael R. Brandy, do not want to go to hell for nothing or for nobody. I don't want to go to hell for someone else's sin. I don't want to go to hell, period. You have to really think what it matters. It's either you do it or you don't. If you don't, you're going to go to hell on that one sin alone. And boy, that fear of going to hell will get you to do the right thing. If I don't get out there and say the right thing to this guy, because I know he's committed these grievous sins that are really disrupting the community, I'm going to go to hell if I don't say something. Even the wife to the husband to the wife, the mother to the son, I don't care who it is. We have to look at all things, first and foremost, the glory of God in our own souls. Don't let no other human being send you to hell and cause you to commit sins of omission. Now, verse 20 we read, iniquity for want of thy instruction, or if thou neglect to reclaim him and he perish, or owe his conversion to another when duty requires thee to care of him. Thou shalt answer for the possible bad consequence. He's saying even if the just man, you don't warn him that he's going astray and you see that he's starting to go off the road, he hasn't committed a mortal sin yet. But you are not guiding your flock the right way by teaching them how to preserve in the faith. Teaching them all the things when you see that they're starting to commit venial sins and they're starting to drift away. It's the job of all Catholics, most importantly the pastor of the souls, to go in there and tell these people to persevere and to warn them. And he's saying, if you don't do that, and perchance somebody else does do it, because then God sends another person, another Catholic to do it, because you didn't do your duty, that person may well, very well, persevere in the faith and not fall away. But I'm going to hold them accountable. I'm going to hold you accountable for the sin they may have committed. That they may have committed, even if they didn't commit that sin. This is pretty dangerous stuff. Because God's saying it wasn't you who edified the flock. I had to use Joe Catholic down the block to come down and edify him, because you wouldn't do it. I had to send that Catholic to a book on his own that he was looking up on the internet, searching somewhere. And he read a good book and admonished him through the book. But you, who was your obligation to do it, and did not edify him and strengthen him, I'm going to hold you accountable for the sin he may have committed, even if he didn't commit it. You see how important our duty is here? This is no joke. Not only to admonish the sinner who's in sins, grievous, serious sins, that are many venial sins that are leading them off the path, but even to edify the just and keep them on the right road. And that's the obligation, for instance, of your immediate family members and the people that you attend Mass with in your church. That's the most immediate obligation. The flock that you have access to, Catholics whom you communicate with and socialize with because they're within your realm of contact, the ones who you pray with, those are the first responsibilities of all of us, is to watch out for that. And then for the people you come in contact with in town. Most importantly, too, these people are trying to say these apostate diamond brothers, these stupid bastards. And I don't say stupid, they're devils, because they're not stupid. They're full of pride. They go into these churches over there and they don't think they have any obligation to profess the faith to those whom they're praying in communion with. The spiritual bond is the greatest bond of all. You're not the physical bond. It's the spiritual bond that you have with people. And when you pray with somebody, you're telling that person, I am one with you in spirit. So if anything, the obligation to profess a faith applies first and foremost to those whom you're praying with, to Catholics and even the so-called Catholics who you're praying with. So if you should even suspect that any of them is a heretic, your duty is to go up right there and admonish them. If they don't listen, say, I can't pray with you, and tell the priest. And if the priest doesn't do anything, get out of the church, because then he's a heretic. By omission, at least. Because he's in the, and if you know the priest is a heretic, you're even worse. So they think that you can walk right in here. See what I'm saying? They're under this operation of error because they're immense pride. They cannot see the grievous sin they're committing in the eyes of God of omission. They cannot see it, but they're doing it every Sunday. I've done it too, folks. I'm not trying to play innocent in this. So God broke my pride and humbled me. And I'm telling them, unless you all get humbled out there, you're all in trouble. If I can do it and God's grace has enabled me to do it, then you can do it. I tell you many times when you go into these churches, just start talking to the people who what they believe in. Ask them if they think if a man who dies as an apostate Jew or Muslim and that worshiping that God, false religion, could he go to heaven? Just ask them. You know, ask them a multitude of questions about the blasphemies of John Paul II and all the sins he's committed. And do they address that? You know, the churches that the apostate diamonds are going to are Vatican II churches. That's where they're going. And they're the very first ones to come out and tell you that whole church isn't Catholic, the leader is an apostate, and the priests are all heretics. And they're going there. And they don't see that they're committing the sin of omission by not professing the faith to these people who may have access to it and whom they're spiritually praying with. So now, we're talking about here in our case even, the sin of omission extends to the point of even not warning the just people to persevere in the faith when you know that they may be deviating and you're not strengthening them. We're going to read that again. It's so important on commentary in chapter 20. Iniquity for want of thy instruction, or if thou neglect to reclaim him and he perish, that's the guy who sins, or owe his conversion to another whose duty requires thee to take care of him. He's talking also about the sinner, too. He says, if you don't rebuke that sinner, we'll get into the just man here, too. He's talking about the sinner, too. So if you don't rebuke that sinner, if Ezekiel didn't do it and he refused, God would have got another prophet to do it. And Ezekiel would have bared the iniquity of that person and God would have cut him loose if he didn't listen. You may be able, even though God highly chooses you for something, you better not, you can be a little bit, commit some sins against God occasionally, some of these prophets and Moses, but you better repent of it real quick because you're still, it's a mortal sin, you're still guilty. So God's saying, I'll send somebody else to rebuke him and you're gonna perish, you know, because of his sin. Okay, so it says, iniquity for want of instruction, or if thou neglect to reclaim him and he perish, or owe his conversion to another, when duty requires thee to take care of him, thou shalt answer for the possible bad consequences. Thy sin is great, whatever become of him. But if he be damned, though he must blame himself chiefly, and he doesn't get off the hook neither for ignorance, You know, he's still guilty. Even if you didn't rebuke him, he committed that sin. He's guilty of it. And it says, and he'll be damned. Yet the blood of his soul shall cry out for vengeance more than Abel's. In hell, he'll say, Richard, why did you tell me when I was in the flock? Why did you warn me? Why did you warn me what I was doing? Why did you tell me I committed the sin? The Diamond Brothers, all the people they pray with, why did you tell me? The priest, why did you warn me? Why didn't you yell it out in the back of the church with a bullhorn? Instead, you went in and prayed with us and made us believe that we were okay and that everything was fine. Why didn't you take a... Before you go into a church like that, you got to go up to the priest and first check him and then all the people before you even go to Mass to a place like that. All those people, when they die and go to hell, are going to blame the Diamond Brothers and anybody like them. They're teaching people Catholics are allowed to knowingly pray in communion with notorious heretics. And every person that dies and goes to hell because of that, the Diamond Brothers have to answer for every one of that. If they don't, and if they die unrepentant, they're going to be burning in a deeper pit of hell every time someone dies and cries out for vengeance because they didn't warn them. You think it's a joke? Laugh all you want. You think this isn't serious? It's very serious business. I'm telling you people to stay away from all these bums out there that are telling you just go to church as long as you have a valid Mass. What kind of nonsense is that? They have total disregard for the Catholic faith. Now, he goes on to say, if thou neglect to attempt reclaiming him, thou shalt perish with him. And that was by St. Gregory the Great again. It says, or if he be exposed to trial, and thou abandon him. Or if thou neglect to husband well the precious moments, when I open his eyes and fill him with apprehensions and his dangerous state, I will require. God says, my grace is working on those people so that they would listen to you. But you are not saved by grace alone. Grace is the first thing that we need, without which we can't be saved or even do anything. But then they need to be preached to, the Word of God. Faith cometh by hearing. And somebody needs to be rebuked and told, so that then they can their conscience can be totally indicted and the conversion process can go forward. So God says, woe to you, whom I'm giving these people, right now I'm preaching a sermon. God's giving all the people that listen to me right now, guaranteed, no doubt, actual grace is at this very moment to listen to what I am telling them. And I am preaching to you people the Word out there. And I'm telling you that you are committing sins of omission for going into these churches and not caring what these people believe in, or worse, knowing what they believe in and continuing to pray with them. Continuing to pray in communion with them. Because even if you did your job and rebuke them the way you should, they would first of all kick you out of the church. Then you also are bound to avoid them too. That's another issue. And separate from them. So there's several sins you're committing there. Read my book, Faith Before the Mass, and at least five mortal sins you're committing every time you go to Mass in a non-Catholic church. Now, verse 21 says, warn. It is the duty of a pastor to warn the just as well as sinners. Here's the part where he's talking about the just man. Well, even then it applied over here too, but here's where he particularly specifically says it, because verse 21 talks about that. Warn. It is the duty of the pastor to warn the just as well as sinners. It will not suffice to do this publicly. Sometimes we must go from house to house like Paul and compel those who are in the hedges to enter the marriage feast by most persuasive arguments. He's saying it's not enough for me to just preach it here to you in the pulpit. And then I go during the week and look at my own brothers committing sins or venial sins or faults. And I don't say nothing to their face because I know it's really bad or it's leading them on the road to perdition. I figure it suffices for me just to say it in the pulpit. Then I can go during the week and live with my brothers and pray with my brothers and act as if they're not doing anything wrong. That's what I say about the one-on-one issue here. The Catholic faith is not just preaching and teaching from a pulpit. It's also going down right into the face of the person who's sinning and helping that person. First for the glory of God, for your own soul, and then for their own soul. And my own brothers admonish me too. We all do it with one another. I'm not just talking about me. My own brothers, it's your duty if you see me committing a venial sin or a mortal sin to rebuke me. Are you sharing the guilt of my sin? What good would it be for you to just mention general terms about something, not come up and say, Richard, I caught you doing this, if it's a serious sin? And if it's a lot of venial sins, it's a grievous thing where the person you see him leading into perdition. And you don't go up to his face and talk to him. None of these priests, I know, I went to the churches. They don't care one bit what goes on outside of the Mass. Once you leave Mass, that priest doesn't care what you're doing in your homes. He doesn't care. This goes way back before Vatican II when I talk about your Sunday Catholics. They weren't true Catholics at all. They were only Catholic in name. There were heretics, and the ones that were, most of them were bad Catholics. And those so-called parish priests never cared one bit individually for the flock. They never kicked out the adulteress from the flock, or the drug addict who was a public drug dealer, or a mafia person, or a blasphemer or somebody who they knew was a heretic in the flock. They never went up one-on-one to their face and says, I want you out of my church, and I want you, unless you repent. Or go into the person's home and you notice chaos, something's going on in the home where the kids are being endangered by their parents watching pornography or something. I never once have seen in my parish that I was in, Our Lady Good Counsel Parish in Newark, New Jersey, never once have those priests ever came around to go to anybody's church, house to look what they're doing, to admonish them personally face to face. In the confessional, maybe they give some advice, but not face to face. Not kicking them out, not admonishing, not rebuking them even publicly when their sins are public. You don't see none of this anymore. And the duty, our duty is also to teach people how to be just. That means professing the faith and teaching people how to persevere. So that when you see, perchance, that somebody's slipping down the bad road, they're doing something wrong, and you don't tell them when you should, you're committing a sin of omission. Now we're going to read what St. Augustine talks about, and it hints upon this topic we're talking about, in his expositions on the Psalms, and he's writing about Psalm 39, verse 11. Remove not thy mercies far from me, O Lord. He is turning his attention to the wounded members, because I have not concealed thy mercy and thy truth from the great congregation, from the unity of the universal church. Look thou on thy afflicted members. Look on those who are guilty of sins of omission, and those who are guilty of sins of commission, and withhold not thy mercies. This is my prayer right now, Lord. Please, all these people that are listening to my sermon right now, have mercy on them. Don't pull your grace away so they commit the sin of the Holy Ghost, so they can no longer see. Continue to give them the grace, and let my word strike into their heart right at this moment. That's God's mercy acting on you right now, everybody that's listening to my sermon. And understand the grievous evil that you're committing. By the sins of omission you're committing by going into non-Catholic churches and not opening at the mouth God has given you to profess the Catholic faith to these people and to rebuke and admonish them, which it's your duty to do. May that now strike in your heart. He's praying, please, Lord, thy mercy and thy truth have continually preserved me. I should not dare to turn from my evil way were I not assured of remission. I could not endure so as to persevere if I were not assured of the fulfillment of thy promise. Innumerable evils have compassed me about. Verse 12. Who can number sins? Who can count his own sins and those of others? A burden under which he was groaning, who said, cleanse thou me from my secret faults and from the faults of others. Spare thou thy servant, O Lord. Our own faults are enough. Those of others are added to the burden. I fear for myself. I fear for a virtuous brother. I have to bear with a wicked brother. And under such burden, what shall we be if God's mercy were to fail? He's going to tell us then. We have to get down and realize that, first of all, these are serious things. These are grievous sins. We have to get down and ask God for His mercy to open our eyes and break our stubborn pride and give us true humility. But Thou, Lord, remove not afar off. Be Thou near unto us. To whom is the Lord near? Even unto them that are of a broken heart. He is far from the proud. He is near to the humble. Oh, how what humility it takes to get up and say, I was a wretch myself. Read all my writings. I committed the most grievous mortal sins against God all the way down this road, even up to the point when I was in Blanco's Chapel. Not until I abjured and stay away from these churches that I get into the Catholic Church. I say it many times. And unless people are willing to sit down and look in the mirror and say, we're just worthless worms. We're so easy to sin without God's grace. And even when He gives us our grace, we're still stubborn as mules. If you don't get down and admit that, there's no hope for you. All these people, when they make corrections, what do? They correct their position, never go back and admit they were wrong. You never hear a confession out of them. You never hear an abjuration. Why do you think people oppose our specific abjuration? Because of pride. I didn't do no wrong, and if I did wrong, it really wasn't my fault, because I didn't know no better. I was just a stupid dupe. I was dumb. I didn't know no better. All these excuses that you make, you're just full of pride. So people cover up their old mistakes and go on and correct them without going back and saying, I made a mistake, I committed a sin, I was outside the church. Look at the Diamond Boys. Have they ever admitted that they were outside the church on anything? On anything? And in the beginning, they were holding on to, even now, the heresies they're holding, let alone when they were not even holding the City of the Constitution and condemning JP2 for the sins that he was committing. You know, it's Michael Diamond in particular, especially. Even now, Peter Diamond, who's committing the sins by telling people they can go into these churches. And only praying communion with non-Catholics, in which you commit at least five mortal sins. And the Diamond Brothers heresy, where they teach that Protestant children who are of the use of reason between the ages of 7 and 14 If they never heard of the Catholic Church, some of them could really be Catholics and inside the Church, even in spite of the fact that they never heard of the Catholic Church or the Catholic faith from a Catholic source. That's what the Diamond Brothers believe. So they deny the salvation dogma. They're not pushing specific abjurations the way they should. They're trying to hint around. They keep changing their position a little bit every week, but they're still never coming out with the truth. And even if they did finally come out with the truth, they'd have to admit they were wrong themselves and abjure to come into the Church. Where is any of their admission of guilt? I'm just listening to you. They have a handful of other sins that they're committing over there. Those are some of the main ones I'm talking about, the faith, you know. Not only praying in communion with notorious heretics by attending their masses. Okay, so that's the biggie, you know. And so the Salvation Dogma is another biggie, you know. But read my book against the Diamond Brothers. Just read my quick reference manual. It gets into the sins they're committing now. And why don't they see their sins? Because they're full of pride. And God is very far from them until they humble themselves. It says, God is far from the proud. He is near the humble. For though the Lord is high, yet he hath respect unto the lowly. But let not those that are proud think themselves to be unobserved. They think they can walk into that church and escape. They even take off their religious garb when they go into the church so nobody can know who they are. And sneak out the back door when they're done, thinking God don't see them. Or the people don't even see them, you stupid idiots. Even a pagan is smarter than that, you dumb idiots. You become dumber than even a pagan with common sense. You lose common sense even the things they do. I know what they do. And they don't tell nobody where they attend Mass. Come on. They know that's a guilty conscience speaking out of itself right now. People call them on that phone and say, where are you guys going? They don't tell nobody. Come on, folks. Wake up. Wake up. They want to be famous. Well, their fame is going to last for a very short period of time. And then eternity of hell waits for them. I want to be famous only with God. Not the world. I don't care what the world thinks one bit. And it says, but let not those that are proud think themselves to be unobserved. For the things that are high, he beholdeth afar off. He beheld afar off the Pharisee who boasted himself. He was near at hand to succor the publican who made confession and adjuration. The one extolled his own merits and concealed his wounds. I didn't do anything wrong. I never did anything wrong. I'll correct it, but I just don't have to ever admit I did anything wrong. Or nothing seriously wrong. Maybe a minor error. They'll come out and admit they did something minor. But nothing mortally sinful wrong that put them outside the church or kept them outside the church. When I was in Most Holy Family Monastery in Berlin, New Jersey, I wasn't in the church then. No, and nobody was in the church then. That Brother Joseph was himself an apostate on many points. He was ignoring the state of the accounts positions. He wouldn't take it because that apostate... What's his name I'm talking about? Howard Walsh, who was one of the big supporters in the traditionalist movement of the Vatican II Church, a tremendous apostate, wrote him a letter and warned him that if he ever takes the state of the composition, he's not going to support him anymore. He's a millionaire, this guy, and supports a lot of these conservatives. And warned Brother Joseph that if he comes out and takes the position and starts denouncing JP2 in the monastery, he will pull his money away in support. So Brother Joseph didn't do anything. Everyone knows that, who knows Brother Joseph, and nobody said anything in that monastery. And woe to you if you ever spoke against JP2. I did two sermons. The first sermon I really blasted on Mystical Body of Christ Crucified was my last. That was the end of it. The people went nuts, threatened to take donations away and everything. You see, I wasn't Catholic. I was coming into the church, or at least I had some good while I was going forward. These guys were going backwards. Because they enforced the dictum that we shall not speak against the sins of JP2 and the Vatican II Church because we will not get money from a rich patron. You see what I mean? Michael Diamond was in the monastery at that time. Has he ever admitted his guilt in this matter? That he sat back and let... He did to me even. He silenced me for 1 year after I spoke out against the apostate Jews. It was his will that I should never speak again after that second coming of Jesus Christ tape. That I should never speak again. Because I created a ruckus because of what I said. Because I told the truth. Because he didn't want to lose the few followers that he had. Okay? Has he ever admitted these things, folks? No, he's going on in his pride. And the only time he corrects himself is because when a lot of people are starting to tell him he's wrong, he doesn't want to lose them. That's not even for the right motive, you see? So it says, God was near at hand to succor the publican who made confession. The one extolled his own merits and concealed his wounds. The other boasted not of his merits, but laid bare his wounds. He came to the physician. He knew that he was sick. And that he required to be made whole. He dared not lift up his eyes to heaven. He smote upon his own breast. He spared not himself that God might spare him. He acknowledged himself guilty that God might ignore the charge against him. He punished himself that God might free him from the punishment. Where is all of this in these pride, full of pride traditionalists? What kind of penitence do these priests give you in the pulpit and the confessional when you confess grievous sins? One Hail Father and three Hail Marys and a glory be and go to the altar rail. Where's the punishment? Where's the seriousness? Where's the guilt? Where's the preaching the fire from the pulpit to the flock that you're all on the verge of, actually their flocks are in damnation, warning them, even rebuking them, and telling them about most people going to hell. That means most of the people right now, even that are Catholic, go to hell. And very few Catholics are saved. And face to face getting up to these people and telling them. Where is all that happening? Now, St. Augustine goes on to say, mine iniquities have taken hold upon me so that I could not see. There is something for us to see what prevents us so that we see it not. Is it not iniquity? From beholding this light, your eye is prevented, perhaps by some humor penetrating into it, perhaps by smoke or dust, or by something else that has been thrown into it, and you have not been able to raise your wounded eye to contemplate this light of day. What then? Will you be able to lift up your wounded heart unto God? Must it not be first healed in order that you may see? Do you not show your pride when you say, first let me see, and then I will believe? You have to first get down and say, Lord, I'm a blinded, dumb fool, and we're all very easily hide our own sins, like King David says in Psalm 18:3, for my secret sins cleanse me, Lord. That means I very well at this moment could be committing secret sins. Let me, in spite of the fact that I don't think I'm committing sins, force me to believe I'm sinning. Force me to believe what the Catholic Church teaches. Open up my eyes and have mercy on me, and don't leave me under the operation of error. When you're in this deep type of a sin, and you already have inclination, and you're hearing my sermon now, and you're already on the operation, you had not the faintest idea, even though you're guilty of it, because you became so hardened, you're now listening to what I'm telling you. I just read the church teachings on sins of omission, and if I have time, I'll go over it even deeper on that. Know what you're doing is mortally sinful, and you're sharing in the guilt of these people. I don't care whether you don't feel like you've sinned, or you feel like you're right with God, that don't mean nothing. I'm about to manifest the light onto thee, or rather the light itself would fain manifest itself to thee. To whom it cannot manifest itself, it says, to whom it cannot manifest itself, to the blind. He does not see. Whence is that he sees not? It is that the eye is clogged by a multitude of sins. He's saying you've been blinded. I'm telling you people out there now, you're under the operation of error. The multitudes of sins you've been committing for so long and not the corresponding God grace has not put you under that operation where you no longer believe you're even sinning anymore. You're resting comfortably in your damnation. You're resting comfortably. I'm telling you, Annie, here's your moment of salvation to open up your eyes. You've been blinded. To get down on your knees and say, first of all, who do I think I am that I wake up every day like a Protestant, walk around saying, because I believe in Jesus and I'm Catholic and I go to, you think you're Catholic, and I go to Mass on Sunday and confession on Saturday, I'm saved. Who are you to think that that's enough? But that's what you people think, is it not? Is it not? You're all walking around that. After I hear how many people say, God speaks to me, I'm consoled, and I hate the Holy Eucharist. They're acting like Protestants, as if they can do no wrong. Instead of looking in the mirror and saying, Lord, I'm a worm. I'm a worm, sinful man. Even with your grace, we buck against you like stubborn mules. I must intensively examine my conscience every day and admit that without your grace, I am a worm. I am nobody. Get down on your knees and put dirt all over your head and put yourself head down on the ground and ask God, from my secret sins, cleanse me, O Lord, and make me aware of them. That's what Augustine is saying here. And he says in 21, and my heart hath forsaken me. What wonder if thine heart is forsaken by thy God, when it is even forsaken by itself? You forsake the own law upon your heart, and what you know to be true. What is meant by faileth me, forsaketh me, is not capable of knowing itself. He means this, my heart hath forsaken me. I would fain see God with mine heart, and cannot from the multitude of my sins. That is not enough. Mine heart does not even know itself. For no one thoroughly knows himself. Let no one presume upon his own state, that he's in a state of grace and he's going right to heaven. All these traditionalists are walking out of church with these smiles on their face, and they're on the broad road to hell, every one of them. I lived with them, I spoke with them, I prayed with these bastards. I was a bastard myself. I know how they think. For the life of them, they don't ever believe that they can possibly go to hell or be in mortal sin. And now it says, was Peter able to comprehend with his own heart the state of his own heart, who said, I will be with thee even unto death? There was a false presumption in the heart. There was lurking in that heart at the same time a real fear. and the heart was not able to comprehend the state of the heart. At that time, Peter already committed the sin. God already knew his heart. He says, you're going to forsake me when the cock crows. And Peter, for the life of him, never knew this was in him. Till it happened, and God said, I told you, there it is, got you. Got you, you didn't examine your heart. You too quickly depended upon your own human goodness and says, I'm great. I'm never defiled. I get worried when people say that. I'm never going to go bad. I'm so good, I know that I'm going to stay good to the end. I get worried when people say that. Boy, that's scary stuff. But this is very important. When Peter said that, at that very moment, Peter really is thinking in his heart that he's not going to do it, but this was a presumption. He really has sin in his heart to betray Christ. The minute he was going to be tested and he was going to have to undergo martyrdom, and he was going to have to go persecution and death maybe even for Christ, he then denied him. Denial was in Peter's heart at that very time, and Christ even warned him. And he didn't know it. He didn't know it. You people that are going to this church out there and saying, I think I've read these all wrong. I can go to these churches and masses. I'm not doing anything wrong. You are. You're actually doing something wrong. You're committing sins of commission even by going in there. You know, and you're saying, I can't comprehend where I'm guilty. I'm telling you, you are guilty. And he says, about the part about Peter again. Was Peter able to comprehend with his own heart the state of his own heart? Who said, I will be with thee even unto death? There was a false presumption in his heart. There was lurking in that heart at the same time a real fear, and that heart was not able to comprehend the state of the heart. Its state was unknown to the sick heart itself. It was manifest to the physician. That which was foretold of him was fulfilled. God knew that in him which he knew not in himself, because his heart had forsaken him. His heart was unknown to his heart. His heart was unknown to his heart. See how important it is when you say that you better. But Peter was humble. As soon as he understood what happened there, he got down on his knees and he cried and he begged for forgiveness. He knew he committed a mortal sin. It was apostatized. He knew it, and he was humble. But what happens to all these people out there just because they say, I don't believe I'm doing anything? They all act like Protestants. And they don't realize, first of all, the great sins of omission you're committing. And I say commission too because all these people that are going to these non-Catholic churches and know it, like the apostate Diamond Brothers, all the people they're teaching are going out and telling other people the same thing. And all the traditionalists do. It's not the apostate Diamonds. It's not just them. It's the CMRI. It's the Chicottists. It's the Sanborns. It's all of them. Not only are they apostates and not Catholic, they're also teaching that that's one of their big heresies, is that your Catholics are allowed to knowingly pray in communion with heretics and attend masses in non-Catholic churches. That is what, folks, they are teaching. And you're hiding that from your heart if you think that's not a sin. And let God's grace today with my sermon and all my sermons in this particular area wake you up. I suggest strongly you read again my book, Faith Before the Mass. And I'm telling you, I don't care what you think, you are in mortal sin. You commit at least 5 mortal sins every time you do it. And if you die tomorrow, unabjured, repented and abjured, you're going to the deepest pits in hell.
See my book, Sins of Omission.
End of sermon. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. This recording is produced by Mary's Little Remnant, 302 East Joffrey Street, Truth or Consequences, New Mexico, 87901-2878. Visit our St. John the Baptist website at www.johnthebaptist.us or email me, Richard Joseph Michael Ibrani, at rjmi@johnthebaptist.us or send for a catalog to the just mentioned address.